This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
My favorite topics every year, players we're worried about being wrong about. It's tough to just say it. If I don't screw up the title of the show at any point, then it's a win. Welcome to Monday's edition, June 29th. Adam, Dave, and Heath. What's up, Dave?
Sir, hello.
What's up, Heath?
Seems like a lot of abouts.
Yeah, players.
And worrying, a lot of worrying, too.
Worried about, well, players were worried about being wrong about. It's not that
what
many.
About, what about players were worried we are wrong about?
How about players were worried about?
No, that's completely different.
Completely different.
Dave,
not
come
the,
on.
Not the same thing at all, Dave.
Come on, sorry. Dave Richard. That's sorry. A different sorry. Show. I'm worried about being wrong about Cam Scataboo, DJ Moore, and Colson Loveland. Dave is worried about being wrong about Jadarian Price, Sam Laporta, and the Steelers running backs. Heath is worried about being wrong about Trevion Henderson, Emeka Buka, and Brock Bowers. I'm pretty much worried about being wrong about every top 40 player, I guess. Yeah.
Well, that was one thing I was going to say at the top is like, if I was putting together an even better list, it probably would have been a lot of guys we talked about last week. Like it's those guys from pick 12 through 24, maybe even extending a little bit past that. But we just talked about all those guys last
right.
week. Like I'm really worried about being wrong about Devon Achane, but I feel like we kind of covered that.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, I pick guys that I am sort of typically completely in or out on. I just don't draft them or I draft them a lot. I don't know if you guys kind of felt the same way. Or intend to draft them or not draft them.
I think I mostly put guys that I'm afraid that I'm too low on. I'm not worried about the guys that I'm excited about because I'm excited about them.
True, but you know, you could be like me with DJ Moore. I'm excited. I'm like, ooh, there's a lot of red flags here. A lot of red
flags. Yeah, I could be wrong. But I don't really worry about being wrong about being excited about players.
Okay.
I worry about being wrong about being too low about players.
Thank you for saying about that many times. News and notes real quick here.
About how many times did I say it?
That's four in the last 30 seconds. Houston offensive coordinator Nick Cayley talked up C.J. Stroud, said he looks good, he's locked in, he's more comfortable now, he's at a different comfort level this season. So that is nice to see, especially if you want to draft Nico Collins or anyone else in that passing game. ESPN's Jeremy Fowler was on TV, and he said that he thinks Rashid Shaheed had a great spring and will have a bigger role this season. And Brendan Sorsby will not be eligible to play in the CFL. Is there any news I missed? Not a lot. It was a pretty quiet weekend.
You know, it's not a lot going on when Brendan Sorsby is your third news item.
Yeah, he had been first. Johnny in the chat says, Adam gets excited about a good fruit salad. 100%.
I like fruit salad.
Who doesn't?
Yummy, yummy.
Yummy, yummy.
Who doesn't? Forget it. Heath, what's coming up on FFT Dynasty?
Were you about to ask us if you were a fruit in a fruit salad, what fruit would you be?
No.
I thought he was going to ask what fruit we would put in a fruit salad if we could choose like the top four fruits to put in a salad.
I love that. Let's do that. Let's do that midway through the show. Make a fruit salad with only four fruits. Which do you choose? Heath, what's coming up?
We will not be talking about fruit salad on FFT Dynasty, but it is rankings update week. We'll have new rankings coming out on July 1st. So we'll be talking about some of the movers and the shakers and the dynasty rankings over the last calendar month. Yeah.
Okay. Let's do this show here. I'm going to let Heath go first with Trevion Henderson. You are worried about being wrong about Trevion Henderson. He's RB22 in Fantasy Pros PPR ADP, 53rd overall. What are you worried about?
No, I think with Trevion, I've kind of just ranked him, I think, where everybody else has. You said he's 22 and 53. I might be a little higher overall. I have him at RB23 and 60. But I think there's kind of two sides of this. One, Ramondre Stevenson was legitimately awesome last year. And if he's that good again, then Trevion Henderson's not going to be someone that you like want to start. He's just going to have some boom weeks when you don't expect it. He's probably a better flex than an RB2. Two, I think Trevion Henderson's awesome, and he did some things last year that were pretty awesome. And I would hate to be out on Travion Henderson and have exactly what we thought was going to happen last year happen this year. So he's one of those guys that has this wide range of outcomes, which is the type of player I'm usually worried about being wrong about.
And you and Dave are pretty similar. You both have Travion Henderson about 22 or 23 in your running back rankings. Jamie has him 28th. And again, on Fantasy Pros, his ADP is 22. So you and Dave basically have Travion at ADP. Jamie's the low guy on Travion Henderson. Dave, are you worried about being wrong about Travion Henderson?
Not really, because I've got him at a spot in my rankings where the running backs around him all have similar, not similar question marks, because he's a unique case. He's somebody who 1 year of experience. Everybody knows this. We saw the highlight plays, just didn't get enough opportunities. When he did get opportunities, there was that 3-game stretch in the middle of the year without Ramondre Stevenson. He played like a top 5 fantasy running back. He averaged over 24 points per game. That's part of the upside case for Travion Henderson, is that he just outplays Ramondre Stevenson. He gets better at all the little things that running backs are asked to do in a Josh McDaniels offense. And he relegates Ramondre Stevenson, who was, let's be real, like, he had moments of being good last year. He was unbelievable to end the regular season, but it's not like he was amazing. He's a solid NFL running back. He's going to be able to play, but he can be overtaken. And if Henderson is improved in any way, shape, or form as a runner and as a pass catcher and as a blocker, all those important things, then we're ranking him way too low. So I've kind of middled it. I feel the same way Heath does. I want to get him, especially when I feel good about my first four picks. When I love my first four picks, or if I see him in round six, yeah, I'll fire the shot on Travion Henderson.
I think, like, it's the guys, he's ranked right in the same range as DeAndre Swift, Javonte Williams, Travis Etienne, Tony Pollard, maybe for some, Bucky Irving for some. And I just think, man, if Travion hits, I'm going to feel so dumb for drafting those running backs over Travion Henderson.
It's true. Because those guys, I don't know how many of those guys, you can run through those names again, how many of them have, let's call it, let's go low. Let's say 17 PPR point per game potential.
That's not low. That's pretty high.
That's really high.
No, that's high in general. Well, I'm thinking in relation to the 3-game stretch that I just talked about that Travion had. Mm. Weeks 9, 10, 11, 19 touches per game, 4 targets per game, 24 PPR points per game.
Yeah, but here's the thing. That was all without Ramondre, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not saying Travion Henderson doesn't have huge upside without Ramondre, but, you know, he's going behind DeAndre Swift. Does DeAndre Swift have huge upside without with Kyle Monongo?
Of course.
Does Bajal Tuten have huge upside if Chris Rodriguez were to get hurt? I think so. So I think
he might have huge upside even if Chris Rodriguez stays healthy.
Right, so you have to ask the question, I mean, who's got upside if the other guy stays healthy? And you said Ramondre can be overtaken. I agree Ramondre can be overtaken, but I don't think that Ramondre
can be to the tune of, 19 touches per game.
Yeah, I think it goes away.
I think pre-2020, and that's where I think Dave and I disagree just a little bit, is I think pre-2025 Ramondre can definitely be overtaken. I really think maybe we're under, like, especially in the passing game. He caught 87% of the passes thrown his way and averaged almost 11 yards per catch on those plays.
All right, but that's so out of the ordinary for him.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if he's that guy, then Travion's not making. If he's the guy that's averaging 4.5 yards per target and struggling to get to 4 yards per carry, then yeah, Travion could make him go away completely.
Yeah, yeah.
I also want to bring up that through weeks 1 through 15. Ramondre Stevenson averaged 9 PPR points per game. He had 3 touchdowns in 11 games.
Well, in the games that he was healthy, I don't know why I never have updated these. I did this before the Super Bowl, so not including the Super Bowl. They had about the same amount of touches in the Super Bowl. But in the games where he was healthy, weeks 1 through 8, 12, 13, 15 through 18, and then the first 3 playoff games, Ramondre had 181 carries. Travion had 157. Ramondre had 39 catches. Travion had 27 catches. Biggest stat for me, from the 3-yard line or closer, Ramondre had 8 carries. Travion had 2.
Any chance you have those numbers without the final 3 regular season games?
No. All right, so that's Travion Henderson. Let's move on. Let's get Dave's first guy. He's similar, you know, about a round later, Jadarian Price. He's RB 26 in ADP. Henderson was 22. Henderson was going 53rd overall, or is going 53rd overall. Jadarian Price is going 66th overall. Dave, what are you concerned about being wrong about as it relates to Jadarian Price?
I am worried that we're hyping up a rookie too much. First round pick was a little surprising. I don't know. A lot of mockers had Price going first round to Seattle. To me, it was a little bit surprising for somebody who just didn't have as much work as a typical running back that's taken in round one has. So clearly he was drafted for the athletic profile, and he's a good running back. The film proved that at Notre Dame. And he's going to a spot in Seattle where, in theory, he should run away with this thing for the first half of the year. Zach Charbonnet coming back from the ACL injury in January. We don't know when he's going to be back, and we don't know how good he'll be when he does come back. But it's still a rookie who's going to split. Seattle's going to split work between their running backs. They proved that last year. And they're talking about George Helani like he's going to be an important part of the team. He's not great for fantasy. At least we don't think he's going to be great for fantasy, but he's great for the Seahawks, and that's why the Seahawks love him. They're changing coordinators. The offensive line is okay. And Price himself has a history of fumbling near the goal line. That's going to be something that could hold him back. How does a rookie go about proving that he's solved fumbling issues when he doesn't get opportunities near the goal line to do such a thing? That makes me a little bit concerned. And so what's his ADP, Adam?
66th, I think I said.
Right. So we're talking like beginning of round six. I guess that's okay. But I'm kind of feeling like I might be out on Price unless just the steam in training camp is so strong for him. And it's just so obvious. But then again, it seemed like it was obvious for Travion last year. Everybody was crazy about him. We were taking him in rounds three and rounds four, and look what happened. So I think I'm going to pull back a little bit on Jadarian Price. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And I'll be a little bit worried about that. But I think I'd rather settle for him than reach for him.
I'll give you the number that I throw out a lot. In the last 11 seasons, 15 running backs have been drafted in the first round. I did not including Travis Etienne, who missed his rookie season. 13 of those 15 running backs averaged 15 and a half touches per game. Do you think Jadarian Price averages 15 and a half touches per game?
Over the course of the season, I'm going to say no.
15 and a half. I have him projected. So that'd be 255, 262 touches for the year, right?
Sure.
Sure.
I have him projected for 269.
Okay. Okay.
So you think he's going to get more than that? What do you have for Charbonnet? I'm really curious about that.
I have mostly no idea. I've got him at 156.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little concerned about Price just because it felt like he got drafted in the first round out of complete necessity. He was the last pick of the first round to a team that was so desperate at running back. We don't know Charbonnet.
Sounds a lot like Clyde, doesn't it?
It does, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Even he had 16.7, I believe, touches per game as a rookie, but he struggled, obviously. All right, so what do you think? Are you in or out at pick 66 on Jadarian Price?
I think I'm right around there. When this week started, he was a little bit higher than that for me, and now I'm just talking about it is giving me cold feet. I'm going to be a little out on Jadarian Price.
Currently, I have him 67th. There's like six running backs, though, in that range around behind Travion that I'd be fine with. It's kind of all the same. So, mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. So then let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about Cam Scadaboo, another running back here who is going 45th overall as RB 19. I'll tell you why I'm currently out on Cam Scadaboo, but why I'm worried about being wrong about Cam Scadaboo after this. All right, Cam Scadaboo was a top 10 running back per game, despite playing fewer than 22% of the snaps in two of his eight games. In his six games with a normal snap share, Scadaboo was on pace for 1,638 total yards, 60 catches, and 17 touchdowns. Obviously, that looks great. He's going to be on a team that really wants to run the ball, a team that should have, a pretty good offensive line, better at tackle than on the interior. But as long as Andrew Thomas, their left tackle, stays healthy, which has been an issue, should have a good offensive line. But I'm out right now. And now, certainly out on him in round three. He's currently around four pick. I 45th overall. We're getting toward the end of round four. I could start to be convinced to be in on Cam Scadaboo. But listen, here's why I'm out right now. Huge injury that he's coming back from. Open tibia fracture and a ruptured deltoid ligament and a dislocated right ankle. Everything seems really positive with Cam Scadabo with the injury. You know, it's just trending in the right direction. He's going to be ready for training camp. He's doing backflips, whatever. But it just doesn't mean that we know what his explosion and his athleticism is going to be like, because oftentimes it takes a while to really recover. So that's number one. Number two, he's a day three pick. He's a day three pick, and we've played this game so many times. Here, over the last four seasons, here are some players who were day three picks and showed good signs. Last four or five seasons. Ramondre Stevenson, Khalil Herbert, Damian Pierce. He was being drafted, I think, kind of where Scadab was being drafted now. Tyler Allgeier, Isaiah Pacheco, Bucky Irving, Tyrone Tracy, Cam Scadabu, Bajal Tuten. He was barely a day three pick. He was the third pick of the round in a great running back class, but he was a day three pick. He averaged 4.1 yards per carry. He had one carry longer than 21 yards out of, I think, 104 carries or something like that. So I also don't know what his receiving role is going to be. It was so good last year. He made a lot of his fantasy bacon on his receiving role. So I am out because of the injury. I know. I am out because of the injury. I am out because I think he's one of the most likely players to get injured again based on his style of play. I'm out because he was a terrible pass blocker last year and came into the league with a reputation of not being good as a pass blocker. So I don't know that he'll keep that third down role. And I am worried, though, because, damn, he was so good. Heath.
Yeah, I think when I thought it was going to be round three, I probably felt more like you do.
Yeah.
And round four seems just about right. Like I mentioned, that group of running backs just ahead of Travion Henderson, Swift, Javonte, Achan, Travis. And guys in that range, I prefer Scadabu over all of them. I think it's really difficult for me, Scadabu and Judkins, in that round four range, but that's where I think they belong.
Well, the ADPs are very different right now for those two. Scadabu, 45th overall. Judkins, not that different, 55th overall.
Yeah, I like Judkins at 55 more than Scadabu at 45. They're back to back for me, and I think very, very similar players who could be awesome in slightly different ways. Could be really, really awesome, and also could look like Tony Pollard his first year back off of the tightrope surgery.
Dave.
I can't deny the upside for Scadabu. I look back on how John Harbaugh prefers to play football. And you can look before Derrick Henry got to Baltimore and still recognize that running the football a lot was a key component for how John Harbaugh wanted to play. Drafting Francis Maunoa in round one is further proof of that. Scadabu is absolutely the type of running back that I think Harbaugh would love. Physical, tough, can wear down a defense. And I don't think they're going to overuse Scadabu. It did feel like at times when Scadabu was healthy that he was getting overused, but a lot of that was because he was catching the ball, and I'm hoping that he can keep some of that. Jackson Dart being able to throw short passes to him absolutely helped the case, as you talked about, Adam. I think I feel more comfortable taking Scadabu ahead of ADP because I know I can get Tyrone Tracy Jr. later, and that locks up a Giants run game that I do believe in. I do think with I don't necessarily love the guys they have coaching offense this year. It's this weird Frankenstein group of Matt Nagy, Greg Roman, Brian Callahan. It's weird because they've all sucked in the past. But at least in the case of Greg Roman, who's going to head up the run game, he's got a lot of experience having success on the ground. And I think this is a team that I want to buy into running the ball well this year. And Scadaboo's going to lead it. And he's going to have opportunities to score. And he's kind of fun to watch. And if I've got him in late round three, early round four, and I know that's early, that's ahead of ADP, and I can get Tyrone Tracy Jr. way later, I'm good with that. I'm willing to take my chances with those two running backs holding up one spot in my starting lineup every week for the season.
Okay, let's get to round two. So round one was Travion Henderson for Heath, Jadarian Price for Dave, Cam Scadabu for me.
Why are you calling it round one?
Well, that's our because we each have three, and that was the first one for all three of us.
But we didn't draft them. It's not like we were like, okay, my first guy that I'm about worried about was it's semantics. I'm sorry for stopping you. Go ahead with round one.
Boy, you are the man, what's the I don't know. You're the grapefruit. You're the grapefruit in a fruit salad.
Ooh, is it fruit salad time?
No, not yet. After our second break.
Okay.
just an update on the ADPs, as Dave also provided the CBS ADPs. So Travion is going 53rd overall on Fantasy Pros. He's actually going 61st overall in CBS ADP right now. Jadarian Price, 66th overall on Fantasy Pros, and also 61st overall, same as Travion and CBS. And then Scadaboo, 45th overall on Fantasy Pros and 38th overall in CBS. Those three guys actually have kind of like fairly big differences in their Fantasy Pros and ADP and their CBS ADP. The other guys really don't for the most part, including Emeka Ebuka, number two here for Heath, definitely not round two. Of players you're worried about being wrong about, he's going 37th overall in Fantasy Pros as wide receiver 18 and 36th overall on CBS. And yeah, I mean, I think I definitely agree that you should be worried about being wrong about Emeka Ebuka.
And the funny thing is, it's not like, I think when I first thought about this, I was thinking it'd probably be guys that I'm like super high on or super low on relative to ADP. I'm not really with Ebuka because I have no idea. And I am terrified of being wrong both directions. I can't think of a player who, as a rookie, in his first nine games, was on pace for 76 catches, 1,278 yards, and 11 touchdowns, and then finished the season in the second half on pace for 49 catches, 554 yards, and zero touchdowns. Like, it is, was the most Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Maybe it's wrong to say it was the most like two-sided season. We see that type of thing with rookies quite often the other way around, where they get off to a slow start. They aren't a full-time player. They earn the role. They earn the targets. And we are wheels up into their second season. And Ebuka just went the exact opposite direction. Some of what he did in the first half of the season and some of what Baker Mayfield did in the first half of the season seemed a little bit fluky to me at the time. We talked about that. It was kind of, they'd have a pretty miserable three quarters and then Baker would hit a YOLO ball to Ebuka and everybody had a great day. And then that just kind of disappeared. I don't know what to expect from Chris Godwin. I don't totally know what to expect from Baker Mayfield. It is a new offense. I am worried, and I have Ebuka ranked right about the same place. I am worried that I could feel dumb for passing on him in round two, and I am worried that I could draft him at the end of round three, and he's one of the biggest busts of my team.
Well, you'd say passing on Ebuka in round two, but no one's taking him in round two.
Right, but I think he's the type of player, or maybe early round three. Okay. I think he's the type of player who could certainly give us a top eight wide receiver season and make us wish that we hadn't taken some of the guys we're taking over him.
I'm going to leave it at that because I think Dave has talked enough. He really likes Emeka Ebuka. I think Dave and I feel like the injury he sustained.
Week six.
Kind of, was sort of the turning point for him, and Baker was playing hurt too.
Yep.
So,
well, offensive line got beat up. Like, it's terrible to just say, well, injuries and that's all we got. But there's also Mike Evans coming back. And when Evans came back, Ebuka, who was already not at 100%, was getting around four targets per game. That was late in the year. The hope is that he's back around 7.5 targets per game in an offense that will harness targets to him and to Godwin. And then whoever the third guy is from week to week, whether it's McMillan, Otten, Hurst, the running backs. But he's really good. He's healthy now. You're betting on talent, and you're betting on Baker Mayfield too. And I know that that's scary for some people, but we're two seasons removed from Baker having an MVP type year.
Yeah,
I think it's too soon to rule out Baker Mayfield being a quarterback that's bad for his receivers at this point.
I wouldn't rule out anything at all with Baker Mayfield.
Okay, Sam LaPorta.
Everything is possible.
Sam LaPorta is, this is a guy that has a huge difference in his Fantasy Pros ADP and his CBS ADP. Whether you like LaPorta or not, if he's really going to go 96th overall, as he currently is in Fantasy Pros ADP, you should be in on that. That's Sam LaPorta, who Dave wants to talk about here. He's actually 69th, though, in CBS ADP. All right, Dave, the floor is yours for Sam LaPorta. You are worried about being wrong about LaPorta.
there is a range here where Laporta can be back to where he was as a rookie, averaging 14 PPR points per game. It's simple. You think about how good of a player he is in spurts. We've seen it over the last two seasons. We definitely saw it when he was a rookie. And now you add in Drew Petzing. Heath is really the first one that to talk about this offseason. I needed to like come around on all the data points that Petzing provides. And it's true. You go back to his time in Arizona, and it's not like he was just using one tight end because it was Trey McBride. He was using multiple tight end sets at a 33% clip each year in Arizona. And that's not one tight end, that's multiple tight ends. And they've signed Tyler Conklin in Detroit. I don't think he's going to be a big deal, but I think it's a signal that they plan on using a lot of multi-tight end sets, in part because I think they're a little worried about their offensive line not being the same, and they want to put more big bodies up front. But when they use play action, call any kind of play pass, yeah, Laporta's going to run a route, and I think he's going to see his target share go up. I think it's as simple as good player who's going to play a lot, maybe a little bit more than what we've seen over the past couple of years, and a target uptick that comes along with it. Being in on Laporta means being out on J-Mo. And J-Mo is an amazing talent. You heard Scott Turner talk about how Jameson Williams looked amazing at their most recent minicamp. I've been a big fan of Jameson Williams for a long time. I think he's a great receiver too, but it's been rare when both of those guys have been good in the same week for fantasy. And usually it's Laporta who's better than Jameson Williams over the balance of a season. Just some smash weeks that are better for J-Mo compared to Laporta. And the bottom line is that I'm okay taking Laporta as soon as round five is over. If he's on the board and I need a tight end, I have no problem taking him. I think he's got upside to finish as a top four tight end.
I think it's worth noting that in Sam Laporta, I'm sorry. Let me just clarify. How do you feel about Laporta and you're worried about being wrong because of J-Mo being good, basically?
Yeah. If Drew Petzing decides, you know what, I've been using tight ends a ton in Arizona, but I'm not going to do that here because I've got two amazing wide receivers and Laporta is a good tight end, but not a great tight end. Well, now Laporta isn't getting the 33% target share and the 31% multiple tight end sets, and he's not on the field as much. And if he's not on the field as much, that means J-Mo is. It means more receivers are. It means Isaac Tesla is. And that just makes Laporta a dud. I would not reach for Laporta.
Where would you take him?
You've got to wait till round six to get him.
Oh, that's too early for me. But
yeah, I'd take him in round five. And I think it's worth remembering, like, J-Mo was so awesome after Laporta got hurt. But when these two guys have been healthy, Sam Laporta has consistently out-targeted Jameson Williams. And even if for some reason Drew Petzing changed everything he wanted to do and they played three wide receiver sets all the time, Sam Laporta is still going to be on the field in three wide receiver sets. He's gonna be the tight end on the field.
When they've been healthy, he's out-targeted him. But I don't know if that's entirely true for 2024. But fine, let's just say it is. 2024, like, okay, 2023 was Laporta's rookie season. That was his great year. Mm-hmm. Jameson Williams played 12 games and had 42 targets. The last 2 years, Sam Laporta has averaged 5.2 and 5.4 targets per game. It's just not enough to take a guy in round five or six. I mean, it's got to be a lot better than that, I think. It's got to be better than that. And, okay. You know,
how many targets do you need for a season to take him in round six?
Six and a half.
I think 6.5 gets you in round four.
5.2 targets per game in 2024. He was at 10.9 PPR points per game.
10.9 PPR points. 110 targets for the season.
Right, right, right. Yeah. And so,
that's,
like,
that's a top. That's a round four pick.
Well, that's around. Okay, it's a different philosophy. I have a hard time taking tight ends there because I really like wide receivers and running backs. You know, it's still in that range. So it's like once you get to the 90s in ADP, and all of a sudden you're on wide receiver fours and RB3 or fours, bench players there, and you still have starting tight ends, and maybe even Sam Laporta, according to Fantasy Pros. Just my philosophy on tight ends, I can't pass up a wide receiver that I think could have a huge year. We'll talk about that with Colson Loveland in a little bit. For Sam Laporta, who might get 110 targets, and I don't even think he will, because there's no evidence.
I think he's going to have more than that. I think he'll have well over that. He had 120 as a rookie.
Yeah, because Jameson Williams got 42 targets in 12 games.
Okay. JMO wasn't JMO as a rookie. He was coming off of an ACL. Like, he was a mess.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can necessarily count that year as
right. That's what I'm saying.
Fair. That's fine. But still, I was starting to say this. 5.2 targets per game in 2024, 10.9 PPR points per game. 10.9 PPR points per game for a tight end is not bad. Last year, 5.4 targets per game, 11.9 PPR points for Sam Laporta in 9 games. So if he sees an uptick that puts him to 6 targets per game, like he thinks that he'll get, then you've got to imagine that the PPR points will follow.
Yeah.
I don't think he can get to the McBride Towers tier. Bowers tier. Chris Towers? Brock Towers. But I think he could be on that second tier. I think he could finish close to Colson Loveland and Tyler Warren, maybe even better than Tyler Warren. I think that's part of the upside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Laporta is a really good player. I just think that in a full PPR league, now you can convince me in other formats, in a full PPR league, if you think this will change, then great. I'm not sure it will. I just think he's too inconsistent. Because I look at his game log and he's got 4 games out of 10, out of 9. 4 games out of 9 with 7.3 or fewer PPR fantasy points. And he had 4, 4, 4, and 3 targets in those games. I know that when he gets targeted, he's really good. I know that he's probably going to score touchdowns. But I think there's just too many bad games for Laporta in full PPR specific, even half PPR. That's where I am, but Dave and Heath are obviously a lot higher on Laporta.
The main thing is you are, and this is not an insult, it's just the way we are evaluating it. You are completely dismissive of the Stefanski Petzig tight end target history.
No, I mean, no, it does mean something to me. It's just like they never coached a team that had Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams and Jahmyr Gibbs for that matter. You know, like he's going to command some targets too. So I don't know what to make of it. When Trey McBride, yeah,
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's okay.
I'm trying to do that less. So sorry to you and to everybody. Do you think that Dan Campbell knew what he was getting into with Drew Petzing?
Yes.
And maybe part of why he made Drew Petzing his offensive coordinator is because of the multiple tight ends that he was using in Arizona. There were not a lot of redeeming qualities to Drew Petzing based on what we saw from Arizona the last couple of years. And yet he failed upwards to the Lions play calling gig. There's a reason for that. It's because of the tight end usage, and I think Campbell wants it. I'm good with Laporta in round 6.
Okay. So that let me go to Colson Loveland then on this subject here, and we'll get to DJ Moore next. So, oh man, Loveland is so good. I'm currently out on Colson Loveland as a round 4 pick. I could be convinced in a 2-receiver league to take him there. I just wish there was more of a resume for Loveland, who is the number 3 tight end off the board, 42nd overall in Fantasy Pros, 41st overall in CBS ADP. And no one's doubting his talent. And obviously DJ Moore's not there, even though DJ Moore really didn't do much last year. Didn't even have 100 targets. He had 82 targets or something like that. So I'm worried about being wrong because Colson Loveland might be a superstar. I was surprised when the Bears drafted him ahead of Tyler Warren. I think it was perfectly justifiable. They both had great seasons, but Loveland, you know, Loveland's awesome. He was tight end 18 per game in full PPR, tight end 13 per game in non-PPR. He's on a team that is probably going to be pretty run heavy. They're probably going to run a lot of plays, so that should get the pass attempts up, but they are likely going to be pretty run heavy. We should keep that in mind. But one thing that concerns me with Loveland is his ADOT. So we've seen this with Kyle Pitts. It's hard to be a reliable tight end in fantasy with one of the highest ADOTs at the position. He had the second highest ADOT at the position. He also had almost no screen passes last year. And I went back and I looked at the top 5 per game tight ends over the last 5 seasons. And a lot of that, like Trey McBride averaged 1.5 screen passes per game last year. Colson Loveland averaged 0.19. No one was lower. In the last 5 years, no one averaged fewer than 0.5 screen passes per game and finished as a top five tight end. So it's there's a degree of difficulty to the profile of Colson Loveland. He is a downfield guy that last year, for what it could change this year, but last year got no layups. We like long balls and layups. He got no layups. So that might be difficult to repeat. And taking him 42nd overall, when we've got really good players on the board at that point, and he has like six games of a resume, basically, it's a little concerning to me. But yeah, I don't want to be wrong about the next great NFL tight end.
You selfishly sent your picks in immediately after you gave us the topic for the show. So you got to choose players first. I think Colson Loveland is the perfect guy for the way that I kind of viewed this, in that I could feel dumb for being too high or too low on Colson Loveland. This Bears pass attack, getting it right, is one of the keys, I think, to winning your fantasy football league in 2026. Because they've got, right now, I have Luther Burden, Rome Odunze, and Colson Loveland all just projected for a 22% target share, because I really have no idea who's going to lead this team in targets. And that puts Colson Loveland in the round 3-4 discussion for me, like right at the 3-4 turn. It could be that it's Rome Odunze. It could be that Luther Burden dominates targets. But the point really is somebody's going to. That gives all three of them like 120 targets.
Someone's saying, are we saying that he was such a good receiver last year that he can't be good again? Well, no, not at all. But keep in mind, he wasn't a good receiver for all of last year, right? He was only a good receiver down the stretch. And that's not because he wasn't good. It's because he wasn't playing long enough, but he wasn't playing enough earlier in the year. Rome Odunze got hurt, and that unlocked a lot of things for him and for Luther Burden. But my point is, it's just, he's a downfield guy. Now, a 9-yard ADOT is not high for a wide receiver. It's very high for a tight end. And you could worry about his catch rate going down. You know, you could worry about not getting a lot of yak. You could worry just about these cheap fantasy points that other tight ends are getting. Remember the Jonnu Smith season? Jonnu Smith got a ton of screen passes. These cheap fantasy points that other tight ends are getting that he just isn't. So I'm just saying, over a full season, I don't know what to expect from a guy with a 9-yard ADOT, because Kyle Pitts, I think, really struggled with that. And Pitts has had his ADOT lower the last 2 years, and he's had more easy targets, and he's been a more consistent fantasy option. It certainly could happen for Colson Loveland, by the way. I'm not saying that he's going to have the same profile, but that concerns me. It's just, there are some things that make me go, 42nd overall, I don't think I can do it with Colson Loveland.
One of the things I like to look out with these rookies who have the late-ish breakouts is, like, when did they become a full-time player? Yeah. And he didn't play 80% of the offensive snaps until week 8. From week 8 on, he played 13 games. He had 62 catches for 828 yards and 7 touchdowns in a 13-game season.
So good. And does that conclude the playoffs?
That includes the playoffs, yes.
Okay. Yeah, because he was so good in the playoffs, too. Yeah, that's why I'm worried.
You should be worried, because the downside could be that he's third on the team in targets, but I have a hard time buying that. I see how this tight end did as a rookie when he was healthy and when he was really understanding what they were asking him to do. And the numbers that he just gave out tell you the story. I think he's Chicago's top target getter. I think he's the number one receiver in this offense. And you've got to, if there are going to be multiple people in every single fantasy draft that think that way about Colson Loveland. And if that's the case, you're going to see him go in the first 4 rounds.
Yeah.
You're taking a chance. There's no question about it, but I don't see it where he falls back and it's Rome Odunze and Luther Burden leading this team. And taking DJ Moore out of the equation, he did this when DJ Moore was part of the equation last year. And now DJ Moore and his 85 targets are in Buffalo.
It's just, man, every year two tight end recently has disappointed us, right? Everyone that we've been excited about, whether it was Bowers because of injury or Kyle Pitts, I think they drafted Drake London and had just a terrible quarterback situation. And Sam Laporta took a step back. They've all disappointed us. But put it this
way. McBride's breakout was year two, wasn't it? Second half of year two?
Yeah. I don't think he was drafted that year.
Yeah.
If I have one team, I'm probably not drafting Sam Laporta Colson Love in 42nd, but I'll have 10 or 11 teams and I definitely will draft some Laporta because I will be going against my own gut just to make sure I have some of him.
Cause
saying Laporta. I'm sorry. I meant Loveland. Go ahead.
You're not really in on Luther Burden either, right?
I mean, I think he's everything I said about Loveland. You could just apply to Burden, not the stats, but the theory.
So are you just kind of out on the Bears passing game?
No, I'm hoping that Roma Dunze falls to, you know, maybe the sixth round or something and I can get that. But they're all priced pretty high, including Caleb Williams. I really don't like Caleb's ADP. I think he should be more like around 8 or 9. Well, no, I think I'd be comfortable taking him there because there are some other really good quarterbacks going there. But as I recall, he's like around 7 pick, kind of in the Bo Nix. He's going 70th overall. He's QB 6. It's like Bo Nix last year. It's like, yeah, I get it, but I'm not taking him because there are too many good quarterbacks I can get later. That's how I feel about Caleb. But no, it sucks. I don't want to be out on them.
I just tweeted about this earlier today because I was like, we talk about concentrated targets a lot of times, and this could be where I go wrong on the Bears and just being too excited about all of them. But they are one of four teams that I have their top three players projected for 66% of the team's targets, at least. Mm-hmm. So it's London, Pitts, Bijan, Munra, Laporta, Jamo, Jefferson, Addison, Hawkins, and Burden, Odunze, Loveland. Obviously, we're not very excited about Addison and Hawkinson. So it could be a situation where they do that, and it's just there's only one of them that's really great, but the difference is we think Jefferson could have a 27-28% target share.
Yep.
If none of these three guys do that, then they can all three be really, really good, just none of them worth a pick in round two.
Yeah.
Heath, have you looked into how many times a team has had 2/3 of their targets go to three players?
I have not.
I wonder how rare or not rare that is.
Well, I think it's rare probably like it's really hard to calculate because how often do teams have their top three pass catchers play 17 games? And so then you get into the messiness of like, when did they act? Did they have 2/3 of the targets when they were all healthy? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I could try to.
Yeah.
That seems like it would take a lot of work.
All right. Let's take a little break here. Heath will get it figured out in the next 30 seconds over the commercial break. We got fruit salad talk and one more player from each of us to discuss after this. Grapes, pineapple, cantaloupe, strawberries. Those are my four.
You totally messed it up.
Well, listen, I don't think cantaloupe's not one of my four favorite fruits, but in a fruit salad, I think it's pretty much a must.
I love cantaloupe, but I think you can't. There are certain fruit salads that cantaloupe fits really well in. Yeah, who's putting grapes, pineapple, and cantaloupe together?
Me.
Like you've got to build a salad that's cohesive. So I would go with watermelon, strawberry, blueberry, and purple grapes.
Yeah, purple grapes for me as well. All right, so we both have strawberries and grapes. But you have watermelon and blueberries. I have pineapple and cantaloupe.
That's the most bipolar fruit salad I've ever heard of in my life.
I think those are just kind of fruit salad staples, in my opinion. But Dave, go ahead.
I mean, I just want a fruit salad that's got my four favorite fruits in it. So give me peaches, pears, bananas, pineapple.
It's like more of a tropical fruit salad.
I don't give a damn if it's tropical or from Alaska.
Well, it is. I mean,
those are my favorite fruits. Give me.
Eric's asked about cherries, and I like cherries, but I like when I'm having a fruit salad to be able to eat it all with the same instrument. And the cherry, I've got if you're eating a fruit salad that you eat with your hands, then cherries are fine. But I don't want to be eating my fruit salad with a fork, and then I have to set the fork down and pick up the cherry and then spit the seed somewhere.
Yeah, the thing is
very seedless.
If you're having a fruit salad, it's almost certainly at some type of social event, right? No one's just like eating fruit salad at home usually.
Oh, we eat fruit salad at home all the time.
Yeah,
but I have fruit salad for lunch today. Get out of here with that.
All right. Well, I'm picturing it as part of like a platter, you know, at an event. you're not going to serve cherries there because then you're going to make people, we're going to make people spit their pits somewhere. It's disgusting. Cherries are a personal fruit, not to be eaten in public. All right. Round three, or next grouping of players.
I didn't know eating cherries was so private for you, Adam.
It's disgusting. I don't want to see your pits, your cherry pits, Dave. Revolting. Brock Bowers going 20th overall in Fantasy Pros, 25th overall in CBS ADP. Let's call it at the 1-2 turn. Heath is worried about being wrong about Brock Bowers.
I was so high on Brock Bowers last year, and he was awesome, and I think he's awesome. And I haven't changed my opinion about him, but my opinion about the position has changed so much that I can't draft him as high as I wanted to last year. And then the other side of it is this whole Gary Kubiak thing, or Clint Kubiak thing, thank goodness, where we just like spam targets to JSN. I think it's possible that happens with Brock Bowers, but they are so different in terms of like how they play. I can't make that one-to-one transfer. And so I'm worried that I'm going to be sad that I was a year too early on Brock Bowers.
You're too early on Brock. Okay. Yeah, it's a lot to invest. A lot to invest a pick at the 1-2 turn on Bowers.
And I think it really does come down to how you feel about Laporta, Pitts, Loveland, like the other guys. McBride, too, of course. But... man, if he goes, like as Jamie was saying with McBride, if he goes 15 fantasy points per game and we've got five guys that score 13 and two of them are available in round six or seven, I'm not going to feel very good about drafting him in round two either.
I would just even extend it to how do you feel about the guys even behind that group? You know, you might like Isaiah Likely and Kelce and Dallas Goedert without AJ Brown, and you might actually feel like it's a deep position. He might be less inclined to take Bowers or McBride or whoever early. Dave, the Pittsburgh running backs, this is interesting. So where do you stand on the Pittsburgh running backs who Warren is going 27th and Dowdle 33rd at running back? Warren going 22 picks earlier than Dowdle, 70th overall for Warren, 92nd overall for Dowdle. They are much closer in CBS. Sorry, they're almost back-to-back in CBS ADP, 75th for Warren, 79th. For Rico Dowdle, but how are you feeling about them and what are you concerned about being wrong about?
I love the value for Dowdle. I've got them very close to each other in my rankings. I've got Warren as a top 30 running back, 80th overall, and Dowdle 31st at the position, 85th overall. So obviously very close to each other in that round 7-8 turn range. I can't help but notice the career of Rico Dowdle that started in Dallas with Mike McCarthy, who kept Dowdle around for several years, even when Dowdle was hurt, and then gave Dowdle a major opportunity in 2024 that helped Dowdle get paid in 2025 when McCarthy was out of the league. And now here we are in 2026, Dowdle, one of the first acquisitions that Mike McCarthy has when he goes to Pittsburgh. And I'm not saying that he's going to do what Kenny Gainwell did, but I am saying that there's a chance he does a lot of what Jalen Warren can do. And before the show started, I looked at some of the numbers. Warren's avoided tackle rate was really good compared to Rico Dowdle's, but Warren inside the five, he had a 28.6% success rate. That means he didn't score a lot of touchdowns from inside the five. Dowdle was at 75% last year, 40% the year before. I think I know who's going to get the ball inside the five. They were both within one catch of each other and within 0.1 targets per game of each other each of the past 2 years. That obviously includes the 1 year in Dallas, McCarthy and Dowdle together. McCarthy knows what Dowdle can do. Dowdle knows what McCarthy is going to ask of the running backs in this offense. I am scared that this becomes an annoying split where there isn't necessarily a running downs back, a passing downs back, but more of a Warren, you've got the first drive, Dowdle, you've got the second drive, and then they kind of take it from there. I don't have a problem saying that Warren is the more explosive player. Obviously, I like him a little bit better. I've got him ranked higher, but I bet it's going to be close and annoying with these two guys. And it makes me kind of want to avoid them unless I'm doing a zero RB build.
Interesting. I think what's encouraging for me is that Warren had 40 catches last year and he wasn't even the third down back. Gainwell was. Who do you think will be the third down back, Warren or Dowdle?
I just told you, I don't think there will be. I think you're going to see.
Well, you said you were worried about that.
I'm well, sure. But I mean, I can't say for sure that it's going to go out that way. But Dowdle's been a pretty good pass catcher. I don't know how many third downs he's played in his career or specifically in Dallas. That's probably something I should have looked at before.
I think last year he was the third down back for Carolina. I think so.
I don't know if they, you give me a few minutes, I can tell you. How badly do you want to know?
I think I have it in my notes somewhere, but no. All right. So yeah, it is. Your point is taken that they could be except for the goal line, where I think it certainly makes sense that it's Dowdle. Their roles could be interchangeable. That's fair. That's kind of what you're saying.
Sure.
I love that Aaron Rodgers throws to his running backs 1,000 times. That's
another thing. I don't know how much that's going to happen now that they've added Pittman and Bernard to their receiving core. Their receiving group is better this year than it was last year. And I don't think they're going to ask those guys to run 15 plus yards downfield that much. I think you're going to see a lot of hitch and slant routes from Pittman and Bernard. And those guys are going to get peppered with short throws. Rodgers is still going to get the ball out pretty quick. They're going to play at a better pace than last year. That's part of Mike McCarthy's history. But I don't think that necessarily means it's going to lead to a ton of targets and catches to running backs. I bet there's going to be a drop back there. I've got snap counts for third downs for both Dowdle and Warren each of the last three seasons.
Well, that,
I don't, but it's not percentages. I don't have percentages. It's just raw numbers.
Last year, Dowdle was playing more snaps on third down than Hubbard until the last four games of the year, when Hubbard got nearly every third down snap, but Dowdle had like twice as many carries in the last four games. But whatever. They both have experience doing it. They both could, and it's interesting. So right now you would take Warren where and Dowdle where?
Round 7-8 turn for both, Warren first and full PPR.
Okay. Last guy I'm worried about being wrong about is DJ Moore. I am in on DJ Moore. He is currently 55th overall in Fantasy Pros, 52nd overall in CBS ADP. On Fantasy Pros, DJ Moore is wide receiver 27. I love the setup here. Clearly should be the number one target for Josh Allen. We've seen him have good seasons in the past. I don't think I have to struggle to sort of make the case for DJ Moore. But here's why I'm worried about being wrong. He's 29, which I don't think is old for a Hall of Fame level receiver. You know, for a great receiver, 29 is perfectly fine. But for a guy like DJ Moore, it might be old. His yards per route run rate has been abysmal two seasons in a row. Buffalo has been 25th and 26th in pass attempts the last 2 years. They have been very run heavy under Joe Brady, who is now the head coach. And DJ Moore has been in the league 8 seasons. He's been top 24 per game twice. You could make the argument basically every year of his career that he was on a bad offense until last year. And last year, he just stunk. I mean, he just barely got any targets. He had one of the lowest target per route run rates of any wide receiver with 50 or more targets last year. So I don't know how good DJ Moore is. I've often called him the most confusing player in fantasy football, right? Just look at his career. But the last 2 years are bad, really bad. Now, everyone was bad in 2024 for Chicago. Keenan Allen, Romo Odunze, DJ Moore, Caleb Williams, they were all bad. But last year was a different story. I don't know why DJ Moore was targeted so little. Anyway, can he snap out of it? The other thing is Khalil Shakir is not that bad. Khalil Shakir is a solid player. He's their slot guy. He's got a 4-yard ADOT. He's going to get his targets. Dalton Kincaid, he finally feels healthy. He's not that bad. So I think DJ Moore is going to lead them in targets. But honestly, based on their pass volume, that could be 115 targets. Yep. Could be less. So I'm excited about the opportunity. I can talk a little bit more about why later. I'll let you guys discuss. But DJ Moore, he might not be that good anymore. And they throw the ball so little, or they have in the last 2 years, that there are reasons to be concerned. Heath.
I think DJ Moore is one of those guys that I have apparently ranked ahead of his ADP, and I think I have clicked his name approximately 0 times this summer. Everything you said, I pretty much agree with. It seems like it could be a good opportunity if the offensive coordinator, who's called all these run plays the last 2 years, decides to change his stripes, or if DJ Moore, who Listen, I think there was a little bit of A.J. Brown and D.J. Moore last year as well. Like, he wasn't exactly finishing all of his routes or super happy all the time, and which he's had a problem with that throughout his career. So what, how much does the connection that Josh Allen already has with Khalil Shakir and Dalton Kincaid matter when it comes to the target share? And how does DJ Moore respond if it's a 1A, 1B, 1C situation and they're all getting six targets a game, five targets a game?
Dave, what do you think?
I think Joe Brady brought DJ Moore to Buffalo because Joe Brady trusts DJ Moore. They worked together in Carolina. Moore, I believe, had one of his best seasons under Joe Brady. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But I remember seeing after the Bears, I told you guys this, after the Bears-Bills training camp scrimmage, Joe Brady, who I'm chasing down to talk to, made a beeline for DJ Moore and spent 15 minutes catching up with DJ Moore. And then now here we are almost a year later, DJ Moore is in Buffalo. They needed a receiver. They needed a number one guy. And just like Dowdle with McCarthy, DJ Moore knows what Joe Brady's going to ask him to do. I do want to give you the list of Buffalo wide receivers with Josh Allen who've averaged 15 or more PPR points per game.
I know what it is.
It's Stephon Diggs. And then there was Stephon Diggs, followed by Stephon Diggs, and then Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, but he did
was four straight years.
Four times.
Nine targets per game each time. Yeah. Do we even think that DJ Moore gets seven targets per game, much less nine targets per game? And there's been a couple of Bills receivers who've been around 13 PPR points per game with seven targets per game. Cole Beasley was one of those guys once upon a time. John Brown with Josh Allen was that guy. And so I think if you look at DJ Moore and you say, okay, this guy should probably be able to pencil him in for 12 and a half to 13 PPR points per game, I think he'll deliver. I don't think he's going to deliver like Stephon Diggs. Are you cool taking a wide receiver with that type of expectation in round five? That's a question only you can answer.
It sounds like mostly Adam's just scared.
I mean,
he's scared to take the high upside guys. And DJ Moore is just a nice, safe, potentially wet blanket for your wide receiver two slot.
I don't think he has to be, though. I mean, here's what I like about DJ Moore. The touchdown potential. So if I could find the... okay, Khalil Shakir has played four seasons. He has six end zone targets in four seasons. Dalton Kincaid has played three seasons. He has 11 end zone targets in three seasons, 41 games. In 2023... Gabe Davis had 15 end zone targets and Stephon Diggs had 10. DJ Moore has four seasons with double-digit end zone targets. My point is he's walking into a room that doesn't have a guy that gets consistent green zone and end zone targets. And even though the Bills don't pass a lot, they have been about league average in yards, passing yards, over the last 2 years, and they've been seventh in passing touchdowns. You should probably expect at least 30 touchdowns. He wasn't on pace for it last year, but 28 or more touchdowns from Josh Allen. So I think, you know, DJ Moore could probably score eight or more touchdowns. And if he does that, he's going to almost certainly be worth a round five pick. I really like that for him. And it's, I don't think it's out of the question that they throw, you know, they're 23rd in pass attempts, 22nd in pass attempts, and DJ Moore just has a really good season. And what did Scott Turner say about him? Because he coached DJ Moore. He said he's running faster than it looks. Right, because a lot of people think he's dogging it out there, right? But he's a glider. He doesn't look like he's putting all the effort in, but he is, and he's faster than he looks. And also, he's going to be really good on Josh Allen's improv plays. That's what Scott said. So, I'm in on him in round five. I'm actually excited about it. I'm a little worried that he's not that good of a player, but you look at the players going there. Like, there aren't a lot of sure things at that point. So, I'm very comfortable taking him. I struggle with him and Mike Evans. I think I would go with Evans, but I really like DJ Moore this year. There you go. All right. Well, I'm going to go have some, I'm literally going to go have some cherries by myself in the privacy of my own home where I will spit the pits directly into the
garbage. Lock the doors, make sure no one can come in.
Draw the
maybe
blinds.
Light a candle. Put on some Barry White.
Tomorrow's show is a topic to be determined. I'm trying to figure out something fun today to talk about tomorrow. And our show is going to be early. It's going to be 9 a.m. Eastern. So for those of you who like to watch, I'll bring the cherries.
Maybe it should be players we're willing to take early since we're recording it early.
players are willing to reach for? Not bad.
It's an idea.
Or it could just be something.
I already talked about a couple of them today.
I know that we want to do that. All right. See y'all later. See you tomorrow on Fantasy Football Today.
Paramount Podcasts.
Everything has to come to an end.
Now streaming only on Paramount Plus. The acclaimed series, The Chi, reaches its final chapter.
We from Chicago.
It's my home.
From Emmy Award winner Lena Waithe.
There are two types of people in this world. Those that reach for more and those that just enjoy what they got.
This The Chi. Anything's possible.
Singing this song to you.
The Chi, the final season now streaming only on Paramount Plus.